Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
And here we are again.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that now...
And with that bit of, I don't know what sounds we were making, it's been a while. I mean, I had a guest host last time I recorded.
Meanwhile, I busily got sequestered into a cabin in the woods for a week with no internet and no cell phone, which was lovely. And then I got to spend a week in North Carolina, which was less than lovely.
Right. And then last week, it was just, we sat, kind of looked at each other and went,
Nah,
this week.
I think I hear my mother calling
me. But we're back now. Sadly, I think you've seen more movies than I have, at least theatrically.
Which is saying something.
I just, like, I've been very busy. While I don't like to mention where I work, I have a job that we're getting into our busy season. And so
it could be anything retail.
It has aspects.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a corporate office drone, but still.
Still.
But yeah, it's just, I haven't had a chance. I've been wanting to. Part of it is one of the weeks, you know, you were off in North Carolina. I had to drive down to Oregon for my wife's cousin's wedding.
Well then, congratulations.
Yeah, and outside of that, it's just been, you know, I haven't just had a chance. I'm hoping actually with the Labor Day weekend that I'm going to catch some stuff, including one that you've seen.
Which ones?
Part of me really does want to see Suicide Squad. I hear it's not a good movie, but that it's at least entertaining, which puts it a step above Batman v Superman.
It was enjoyable. I mean, it was edging on a little too violent for my taste.
Okay.
There's just a particular aspect of the violence that did not sit well with me. That said, Margot Robbie's assets provide a enjoyable backdrop, shall we say.
Sure, let's go with that.
Spends more time on screen than half the bad guys do. But, you know, I was really impressed to see some of the stories that are starting to come out. You know, because all during the lead-up, you hear all this stuff about Jared Leto being so edgy and getting into his character as the Joker. A, he doesn't spend that much time on screen. B, actually starting to hear stories about other characters and what they're doing. Like the fact that Margot Robbie was doing a lot of her stunts by herself.
Yeah, I've heard that. And from what I hear, impressive stunts.
Yeah.
That's part of why I want to see the movie. I like Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
I think she's got a lot of potential. And I even think she's good casting for Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
It's one of those cases of you just kind of wish she was in a better movie.
Yeah, well.
Although the meme I saw was somebody took a picture of Will Smith and said, you either die a prince or live long enough to see yourself become Uncle Phil.
And it's the picture of him that's bald with the beard.
Yeah.
It is. It's a wonderful, it's been interesting to see Will Smith, the evolution of Will Smith's career.
Yeah.
A couple weekends ago, my wife and I sat down and I rewatched, she had never seen before, The Wild Wild West that he did with Kevin Kline.
Oh, yeah.
And what's his bucket? Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
Fun story about that one.
All right.
You know what role he turned down to be in Wild Wild West?
I do, in fact, know what role he turned down, but I can tell you want to say it. So.
Well, because I'm sure that if you listen really close, you can hear him screaming and pulling his hair out. He turned down the role of Neo in this movie called The Matrix. In order so that he could be, Artemis Gordon. He wasn't Artemis.
He was Jim West. Kevin Kline was Artemis Gordon. Yeah, but it's one of those things of, you know, you look back at the history of things. What would how different would that movie have been if it had been Will Smith?
Will Smith with Morpheus. God.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Will Smith with Lawrence Fishburne as his mentor. I'd pay money to see that.
If that casting still happened, if they'd cast Will Smith. There's a whole bunch of unknowns.
True.
Whole bunch of unknowns. But back to the Suicide Squad.
Oh, yes.
The thing is, it's an interesting property.
Yes.
I've always enjoyed the comic series. It's a great concept. And the original run was fantastic.
Sure.
So I'm curious to see how they handle it on screen. You know, I don't. I think one of the advantages is I'm not going in with high expectations. But if it at least amuses me, again, it's better than Warner Brothers' last DC offerings.
I am certain that you will be amused. To what end, I can't say, but you will be amused.
Fair enough. I realize we forgot something, though, when we started. We should commemorate the passing of a true geek icon this week.
Dear God, yes.
And it's 2016 has been really rough on our childhood.
Uh-huh.
And this week, he was 86, but we lost Gene Wilder.
Yes.
Turns out he'd been struggling with Alzheimer's for several years and finally succumbed. And that's just, you know, the moment you hear that, it's like not terribly surprised because the last few pictures you saw of the man showed he was not in the greatest health.
No.
But still, when I think of the formative impact his movies had. I mean, one of my favorite stories is the time at a party when my friend Scott and I were talking, and no one could understand what we were talking about because we were quoting Young Frankenstein at each other. And not no one, but his, well, now wife and some of the friends were like, what are you guys talking about? And we kind of, Young Frankenstein? Oh, we've never seen it. Blazing Saddles? No. We're having a movie night.
Yes.
You were here for that movie night.
Yes, I was.
And so, you know, the fact that he wrote Young Frankenstein. Not just starred, wrote. And, you know, his impact on that, Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, Willy Wonka. I mean, it's just the kind of a formative layer for the films that geek culture, as we know it now, formed upon.
Well, and to be honest, though, I mean, I got to say, I'm once again the outlier. I never saw Willy Wonka all the way through until I was much older, so it did not have the same impact on me. I still get the references. I still, you know, there are times when I will tell somebody, it's like, you know what? You keep messing up like this, there's going to be an Oompa Loompa show up, blow into a pitch pipe, and sing a song about what we're going to learn from you.
Yeah.
But yes, he was, he will most definitely be missed. And he, yeah, Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein and... Actually, his later work with Richard Pryor, too.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean...
absolutely. That was some great stuff.
I still have fond recollections of See No Evil, Hear No Evil that he did, which was one of the last pairings that they had, which was marvelous. Marvelous movie.
So, anyway, just it would be wrong to not mention him on a show devoted to a culture he helped really build.
Oh, my, yes.
With that, getting back to what we were talking about, the other movie I had wanted to see, that here's the thing, it didn't do well at the box office. And from what I'm hearing from a lot of friends, it's a shame because it's actually a better story than the trailers would have indicated, was Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, I have yet to see that one. I'm actually waiting for it to show up at the Crest, which I'm sure it will soon.
Yeah. And it just, I haven't had a chance for that either, and I'm interested. I hear a lot of good. It just, the trailers did not grab me. And I think it's part of the problem right now. You look at these movies coming out, and you see the trailers, and you get one of two things. You're getting either, it's giving you the whole plot, so why bother see the movie?
Yeah.
Or, in a lot of points, it's misrepresenting the movie you're going to see. You know, last episode with Ian, we talked a lot about how Melissa McCarthy suffered from that a lot of her movies, including Ghostbusters, the trailers don't really convey the kind of movie you're going to be sitting down to watch.
True.
And I think Star Trek Beyond, well, I could, you know, start that while mentioning Star Trek Beyond, one of its stars, Carl Urban, did a magnificent movie that was Dredd, the adaptation of the Judge Dredd comics.
Yes.
Phenomenal film. Great adaptation of Judge Dredd, but the ad campaign sucked.
Don't hold back. Tell us how you really feel.
And did not convey at all what you were seeing. So, you know, I think they meant, because everyone thinks, oh, you mean this remake of the Stallone film?
Yeah, I Am the Law.
And it's like, no, because the Stallone film was Judge Dredd in name only. This was Judge Dredd, and they should have at least touched on how culturally significant Judge Dredd is in British comics.
Yeah.
Even though the character isn't American, even in the comics.
Yeah.
But it's, or mega cities.
Yes.
It still is the issue of, this was a great adaptation, a wonderful movie, very engaging, great cast. But
still a little too violent, though.
You're a little bit more sensitive to violence.
Yes, I am. I'm a special, special snowflake.
But, you know, for the story it was trying to tell, great, but the ad campaign was terrible. I also, I enjoyed John Carter. And that was a movie where...
You're the other one. Okay, I knew there were two out there.
And but... it wasn't as bad. But again, the ad campaign, because the problem with that was the director had control of the ad campaign. And he assumed everyone were as big a fan of Burroughs as he was.
Surprise.
Which is why, you know, they should have first off had the John Carter of Mars. They also should have had the ad campaign pointing out this was the original character that the tropes come from. Because I read reviews saying, this is derivative. And it's like... you're calling it derivative of the things that took inspiration from the original books.
Well, I happen to remember a story you told me a long time ago about when you were working at Wizards of the Coast. Mm. And you had the intern that showed up who had never read Lord of the Rings. And it was his job for the first week to read Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And his response was, it's so derivative. I mean, there's grumpy dwarves. There's the Fett elves. There's these magic users that do all these mysterious stuff. There's the one true MacGuffin. And it's like, yeah, but that's where all this stuff came from.
Yeah. Well, boy, Wizards. One of these days, I need to get a bunch of the Wizards people together to tell the stories of what happened. Those stories have been cropping up again, by the way, in my life. The people, once again, want to hear about me answering all the, are you satanic calls?
So, no, of course not.
But no, actually, because somebody else said, yeah, all you guys that worked at Wizards of the Coast in the 90s all have the business equivalent of PTSD.
Just about.
Anyway, back to...
one question on Star Trek, yeah. Actually. I'm gonna pose the question. If this is an alternate timeline,
mm-hmm.
and in that alternate timeline, Kirk listens to the Beastie Boys.
Right.
And in the Beastie Boys song, they make not one but two different references to Mr. Spock. Does this mean that we're listening to music from the future?
I think you've put way too much thought into that.
Oh no!
Yeah, that
overthink shit. No, sorry.
Yeah, musical paradox. You know, that's. I think that is a little bit of a. That's a. Boy, yeah. Now my head hurts. and I blame you. So with the other thing that really happened in film since we got together last,
mm-hmm.
is there was a much more extended Rogue One trailer.
Oh my! Yes,
that came out. And. And my reaction, everyone has their own reactions because there was a lot of great stuff. And my first reaction was Donnie Yen.
Yes.
Donnie Yen, yep. As the blind, clearly at least force sensitive master, if not yep. full on Jedi.
Yep.
And I'm a big fan of Hong Kong cinema and I've known who Donnie is for years.
Oh, yes.
And although he's gained a lot of notoriety in the last few years for the Ip Man series.
Yeah, true.
And so to see him in Star Wars, it feels like vindication.
To see him, to see Donnie Yen in there, to see Forrest Whitaker in there, to see Alan Tudyk in there, frankly.
Yeah, as the robot. Here's an interesting thing. I don't remember the character's name, but Forrest Whitaker's character
mm-hmm.
is a character from the Star Wars
animated
the Clone Wars animated series.
Yes.
They are taking one of those characters and bringing them canon into the films.
Yes.
And I'm like, at that point, they're basically just saying what they've kind of said all along, which is, the Clone Wars cartoon is canon. Witness character from those being transplanted into yes. the movie franchise. So yeah, I saw it and I was sitting there like, at this point, you already knew you had my money, but can I give it to you faster?
Yeah, yeah. No, you have this nice long analytical explanation of it. Mine just
shut up and take my money. Have it be December now.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's, again, I look forward to it. I think that, Star Wars is in good hands. I'm trying to pay attention to when the Star Wars land is going to be open at Disney, because have to visit. I mean, I am going next year, already got it basically planned, but I don't know if Star Wars will be open at that time.
I know that I'm headed to Southern California soon because my niece turns 11 and they're going to Harry Potter World. And I kind of sort of got to go.
You know, I want to see that, too. I saw the Harry Potter World in Florida.
Yeah.
Right after it had just opened.
Mm-hmm.
And was suitably impressed.
Oh, yeah.
you know, Universal does a good job.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see, especially because one of the problems in Florida was I'm a larger man. I mean, in both height and width. And yeah, there are a lot of the rides I couldn't go on because they don't have accommodations in their seating for larger people.
Mm-hmm.
Not a problem in California. I had no problem getting on any of the corresponding rides at Universal California, and I could not go on the Harry Potter ride.
Interesting.
So I'm hoping that they have learned the lesson, because those were being criticized for being extremely small. I don't think I'm a big fan of Universal Studios. Although we've decided I've probably been enough at this point that I might want to try other theme parks during my Disney trips. But anyway, you can enjoy it. When is this trip you're going?
To determine, spring-ish.
Because honestly, I think everyone should. Actually, this is, well, we since we're digressing to theme parks for a second, one of my favorite trips I ever took was in, I want to say it was 2010. And Larissa and I went to Universal Studios Florida to attend the 20th anniversary of Halloween Horror Nights. And
as if there was any doubt in your mind, you're a geek.
And as a fan of haunted house events, it was just pure joy. And well done. I want to one day see the California version, which I know is a little different, just because the nature of the differences of the parks. Not quite as big, a little bit more heavy emphasis on, in Florida, you'll get some houses based on original concepts they come up with. In, California, they're almost all based on movie franchises.
Go figure.
But, they have the advantage of doing stuff with the tram tour in California. So,
yeah.
Well worth it. Jill went last year and had a magnificent time.
I, if we are going to go with the full digression, I have to confess, although it is an interesting little small, an interesting full circle effect.
Mm-hmm.
The last time that I was in Disneyland,
yeah,
they had just debuted this special attraction
mm-hmm.
called Star Tours.
That's been a while.
Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, it has. And so I'm just deeply amused that since the last time I've been, I now come back and Star Tours is a, well, not Star Tours, but Star Wars is a wholly owned subsidiary.
Oh, yeah.
Well, go on.
Yeah. The other thing that was kind of big news this week.
Dum, dum, dum.
So rumors have been going on for this for a little while, but due to licensing issues, they have to rebrand the California version of Tower of Terror. And everyone's like, oh, are they making these? They're just making these changes. No, there's an issue with the licensing of Twilight Zone, and it's just going to be easier for Disney to rebrand. Now, apparently this, however the agreements work, this is not a similar issue in Florida. That one's going to remain. But they had to rebrand the California version, and they decided, why don't we rebrand it as something we actually own?
Novel concept.
So, get ready. The Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, which is a ride based on a haunted hotel, is going to be refurbished and rebranded as a Guardians of the Galaxy ride.
Oh, my heavens. Okay.
Yeah, and a lot of people are like, "That, but it's in the Hollywoodland part of Disney's California Adventure. How's that going to work?" Based on a movie?
Yeah, I was going to say, it is kind of Hollywood.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's... I think that's about as much down the rabbit hole as we dare go on theme parks, unless you've got something else you want
to
add.
I wasn't going to go to theme parks, but I will step back to movies for a minute, because the other movie that I've seen since last... Well, two other movies. Secret Life of Pets,
mm-hmm.
which was remarkably cute and adorable.
Okay.
And the other one that I saw was Kubo and the Two Strings, which is the new stop-motion animation from, I believe, the same people... That did,
I think it's Coraline.
Coraline and Paranorman.
Yeah. Possibly. I haven't paid that much attention.
I'm torn.
Okay.
I'm torn because I think the best way to put it is, if this movie had come out 20 years ago, I would have nothing but good things to say about it. It's a sharp cast. It's well acted. The animation is smooth. And all around enjoyable. However, it is, you know, the 21st century. And the thing that stood out to me the most is the fact that this is a movie that's it's set in Japan. It is steeped in not only Japanese culture and cuisine and costuming, but also its mythology. And to a person, with one exception, to a person, the entire cast is Anglo. And the one exception is George Takei. Great man, outstanding. He has four lines in the movie, and one of them is, "Oh my." And so I just kind of wonder if this is the best that Hollywood could do.
Yeah.
So, again, good show, rock solid animation, enjoyable all the way through, and wow, it's white. So.
You said earlier, you told me even the animation crew looks like mostly white.
At least going, I mean, judging by names only, which is, you know, only half the thing, and kind of, you know, is a rabbit hole that is dangerous to go down. At least before we got up and walked out of the credits, because, you know, may the gods of nerddom forgive me, we left before the end of the credits. Most of the names in the cast seemed, and the supporting staff and the animation seemed to be Anglo and European names as well. So it was a surprise, but at the same time, like I say, good show. Just take it with a grain of salt. Okay. So
as we're recording this,
mm-hmm.
we are in the beginning reaches of Labor Day weekend.
Yes.
In fact, you know, if I get everything edited correctly on time, this episode will come out on Labor Day. Which means that we are in the midst of three big events going on this long weekend that are significant in geek culture.
So, PAX?
PAX West, or PAX Prime, as it used to be called.
Yes.
Burning Man.
Oh, that, yes.
And Dragon Con.
Ah, yes.
So, you know, we're not talking small events.
No.
Now, there are, but the thing is, there's also small events. My wife is going to an event this weekend called Fairy World, which is a camping event that is kind of convention-y and a little Renaissance fair-like. And she is ecstatic, and I don't camp, so she can go have fun. We don't have to do all of our stuff together. We're married, not fused at the hip.
Indeed.
But, yeah, so you've got those going on, and they've just begun. We really haven't heard a lot of anything out of them. And it's interesting because Dragon Con tends to not be a convention that a lot of news comes out of.
Because everyone has a don't ask, don't tell policy.
Well, but it's also not where media goes to do its big reveal presentations.
There's enough revealing going on at Dragon Con
it's very heavily cosplay, but it's also really closer to a big full-blown old school convention as opposed to a Comic Con.
Yes.
It's huge.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong, but it's almost like an anime convention where anime itself is not the main focus.
Well, you think about it, though. Between those three things, you're looking at, I'd say, at least 100,000 people.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you're probably at 60,000 at PAX alone.
Oh, okay, so if it's 60 at PAX, 50 at Burning Man, that's 110. Heaven only knows how many consenting adults show up to Dragon Con.
I think we put Dragon Con's, like... My thought about Dragon Con is it's the smallest of them. So let's just say 30 for sake of argument.
So you're looking at 150,000 geeks are suddenly busy this week.
Yeah.
Well, and then you throw in Fairy Worlds, which is another 5 or 10.
But that's a small event. But I think all around the country, you probably have a lot of small events because it's a long weekend.
And also that now, because Burning Man has become so large, they're starting to have regional burns. Usually there are different times of the year.
Usually, but you're beginning to have some people doing events because Burning Man's hit a point in its life cycle where it's beginning to lose its luster from its original adherence.
Well, it's, yes.
And so you have people doing other burn-like events that during the weekend just because they want to recapture what they felt Burning Man used to be versus what it's evolved into.
Wow, doesn't this sounds an awful lot like what people have said about Comic-Cons.
Well, okay, when I, and again, there's an article about this on the site back when I was writing articles, which I one day will get back to. I did an analysis because that's what I do for a living. I didn't have all the data points, but I was able to gather enough to get a basic graph, and I was using Burning Man as the outside benchmark for comic conventions.
Okay.
And what I found is there is a certain corollary of as these things evolve, as they become more exclusive and harder to get into, and people start looking for other venues to get the same experience. So the question you have is, if Burning Man is beginning to have competing or possibly competing events, and San Diego Comic-Con is probably about 5 years behind Burning Man on the curve, and other shows like Emerald City Comic-Con are another 5 years behind San Diego,
yeah.
What are we looking at? I mean, and the answer is we don't 100% know because we're still seeing the fallout of the top of the curve, which is Burning Man.
Well, but at the same time, seeing what the further evolution and not diaspora but dispersion of people throughout. I mean, it's almost like franchises,
mm-hmm.
You know, in that so. Well, even you just look at what's here in the Pacific Northwest. You have Emerald City, which grew by leaps and bounds and got sold off to Reed Pop and is now even bigger and more glitzy and even longer. And meanwhile, you've got Rose City, which is just celebrating its fifth anniversary this year. And I'm planning to go to Rose City. I'm planning to spend more money at Rose City than I was than I... I, in fact, I can say with authority that I will spend more at Rose City because I know there are two celebrities that I'm specifically going to see. Mm-hmm. John Cusack, who's going to cons now, who knew, and Summer Glau.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's interesting to see. Now, the other thing we're waiting for is PAX. Okay, PAX usually has news on the gaming front.
And it usually has news in other news.
And unfortunately, it often has news on the geek culture front. Unfortunately, those are usually not as positive. Now, I don't know. I know that I've heard from people, because I have people I know from my time in the gaming industry who know the PAX guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard stories that Mike Kahulik has been working on it, has been getting help, has been trying to address the issues that generally cause blow-ups in the fan community. Now, whether this is true or not, or whether it's effective or not, we won't know. But in the end, we'll see what happens at the end of the weekend.
I think, if nothing else, that there's some poor... Years from now, we will hear the story of some poor intern whose job it was to vet his tweets and his posts for the weekend, so yeah. It didn't turn into something horrible.
I mean, to be fair, there was nothing like that came out last year.
True.
So now, given the year before,
it's like a damage control counter. It's been this many days since Mike said something stupid.
So we will see. I mean, giving the benefit of a doubt.
Okay, fair enough.
We will see, but in the end, though, I mean, one of the reasons I avoid PAX is. And you have a lot of people, including people who are not insignificant in the industry, giving it a pass because, unfortunately, it has built a reputation, and not a good one. And you have people simply say, you know what? I don't want to be caught up in that. Mm-hmm. So we will see what happens. And then, you know, Dragon Con is Dragon Con.
Indeed.
Ever since they were able to finally separate themselves from that problematic original
pedophile. I'm sorry. Yes.
I was going to say original founder. Yeah, I think that the I think didn't he pass away like a year or two ago? But anyway, the since they got rid of that, they've really it's just like it's literally just become a fun party, yeah. And there doesn't seem to be any drama. And from what I understand, it is one of the best organized and best run shows you could hope to see.
Yes.
So I would like one day to get, but the problem is it usually again happens when in my industry is a busy time.
How about that?
So anyway, I guess the other thing I want to turning to, you know, in our normal progression, turning to TV.
All you.
Well, I don't know. You've been catching up on Penny Dreadful, which I'm completed in the series, but you're finishing up season two.
I'm finishing up season two. You were right. How about that? Here you have documentary evidence of me saying you were right, Jeff.
It's always nice.
Yeah, I have to say I've been very impressed with it. The solid writing, great cast, turning in great performances. I'm torn because there are some fun, fantastic character arcs happening with John Clare and with Victor, frankly, and with Dorian Gray and all those. But we know where they're going. Those are the established characters. I don't want to get too attached to them. I'm enjoying the add-ons, the Vanessa and the Ethan and the Malcolm and the, mm-hmm. the Simba and Mr. Lyle. Oh my heavens! Can I just say how much I love Mr. Lyle?
You and Jill.
I find it beautifully amusing that you have this proper Victorian dandy who, I mean, I'm sorry. This man will set any... You have to turn your gaydar way down in order to have him not blow completely up. And he makes no qualms about it whatsoever. And yet he'll hide in the basement to pray. Because he's okay with people knowing that he's gay, but he's terrified for people to find out that he's Jewish.
Yeah.
And that's like, oh.
But true to the era.
True.
I mean, their grasp and their research and their adherence to Victorian culture. The Jill, of course, being the Queen of All Goths, paid attention to what they did for their costuming.
Of course.
And the authenticity of the clothing.
Oh my, yes.
But along with that, the authenticity of their understanding of Victorian culture.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's so much that they play with and they play with well. So I just this week completed Stranger Things.
Ah, yes. I've been hearing lots and lots and lots of good things about that.
And I was sort of the late catch-up on this.
Oh, no, I'm the late catch-up. I haven't started.
And, well, my reason was Larissa and I decided it was a show we wanted to watch together. And so it was one we could sync up our schedules.
Sure.
Because that was sort of the promise. We would enjoy this because we knew we would both like it and we didn't want one of us to get ahead of the other.
Sure.
Worth it on that front, but worth it as a series. It's the Duffer Brothers, and I cannot off the top of my head think of the other stuff they've done. They're an up-and-coming writing duo.
Okay.
And directing duo. And for those not aware, for those of you who've been under the rock or not sure what this Stranger Thing is, it's an homage to the 80s, specifically the kind of things you'd see in the 80s from either the writings of Stephen King or some of the kind of storytelling you'd get from Steven Spielberg. In fact, very direct attempts to basically do the best description, and I think this is exactly what they were going for, is the feel of something that was written by Stephen King and directed by Steven Spielberg.
Okay, yeah.
And while it sounds funny, it's really what they did. And there are little homages to some of the other movies and some of the other shows of that era. But the advantage is, in the end, it is a wholly original story.
Cool.
And it's taking, you know, you have the adolescence coming of age story. You have the adults dealing with a conspiracy. You have the teenagers dealing with a monstrous threat. And you have the paranormal child. You have all of these elements, but it's like they're happening concurrently.
Mm-hmm.
And the characters cross over, but they are... And even though they're distinct and true to the trappings of each of those genres, it is a cohesive whole versus a horrible train crash, and which it could have easily become.
Oh, yeah.
But it was deft writing, really well handled, and really well acted.
I have to say, that is one of the recurring themes that I have seen in the last little while, the last year or so, aside from, you know, all our heroes dying. The writing has just really increased in the last couple of years. Just really sharp, really on point, good, solid writing.
Well, you're getting into a point of the, especially for TV, it's really becoming a writer's genre.
Yes.
The vast stories and what everyone focuses on more and more is not who the actors are, but who wrote the script.
Yeah.
Who put it together. And so when one of the most prominent, in a show that has Winona Ryder as one of the primary leads, to have it, everyone focusing on the Duffer brothers, the writers and directors, tells you kind of where the star of the show. It well put together, but nothing against the acting. This was a great part for Winona,
mm-hmm.
Because she plays a mother worried about her child.
Yeah.
You have, I can't think of the actor's name, but the sheriff character. She always needs a sheriff character.
Of course.
Actor who, his biggest claim to fame prior to this was the secondary anchor man on the Newsroom.
Okay.
With Jeff Daniels. So he was the other anchor man that had the show after
his. I know who you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the male adult lead of the series. So it's great acting. And again, it also has the small town horror. It has the Twin Peaks feel. In the end, and the best part, it's only 8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those, much like Penny Dreadful, which never had consistent episode number, because they always ask for, can we have this many episodes? Because that's what we need to tell our story.
Yeah.
Stranger Things did the same thing. We don't need a full 13 episodes to tell this story, because that would just pad it. Let's just do 8 episodes, tell the story correctly, and move on.
Yeah.
And again, strength of Netflix.
Indeed. I have to say, I mean, you look at the stuff that's been coming to Netflix and direct to streaming stuff, and it is amazingly sharp.
Well, that's honestly, Netflix, I'm going to give them credit. I think they have cracked the code of the future of media. We want it in form, because it is the classic, watch it when you want it.
Watch it when you want it, at the same time, it's limitless and it's limited.
Yeah.
You know, you can binge through that, but you're only 8 episodes, so yeah. You're 8 hours.
Right.
But you get to that satisfaction of doing something that's more than just, you know, previously on such and such.
Yeah. And the one thing I'm paying attention to is at the end of this month, we get the next Marvel series. We get Luke Cage.
Ah, yes.
And the trailers on that look great. And I know we'll be talking extensively about that when it comes out. I am beyond excited. I saw a thing today on the music. They brought a lot of really significant hip-hop artists together.
Good.
To do original soundtrack for the series. But I found out that each episode is named after a classic hip-hop track.
Nice.
And they are really immersing it in that culture. But it's the smart way. It's because Luke Cage was created as an answer to 70s black exploitation for comics. He was Shaft with superpowers.
Yep.
And fortunately, the comics updated him to going from being a Shaft-like character to being a character from a John Singleton film. And that's very much the Luke Cage we're getting for this. That more evolved, even more aware. Not that he wasn't aware in his own way in his original era. But even more so now, because of all the context. And it's just looking like it's going to be a great adaptation of this character who, frankly, is one of those that if you're not a deep cut comic fan, you maybe haven't heard of, unless you're a huge Nicolas Cage fan and understand his background. So, yeah, looking forward to that. But I actually, they've got the new Tick series coming out on Amazon Video, And the clips I've seen from it, it's, I'm accepting that it's different than the Patrick Warburton series.
Yes.
And that it appears to be going for, because the Patrick Warburton series was very much based on the Tick cartoon.
Yes.
Whereas this new one seems to be very much based on the Tick comic book, which did have a different sensibility.
I will be interested to hear more about that, because the sum total of my takeaway from it so far is that of all the franchises that I was not expecting to get a gritty reboot, the Tick was high up on that list.
Yeah, well,
this is the Tick meets Tyler Durden.
Well, we'll see, because again, I'm more versed in the history of the character. Well, once we get a chance to watch it,
fair enough.
We'll see what happens. So, with that, the only other thing is, all right, I know we talk a lot about the CW shows, but we have, and I mentioned previously how I'm excited about the inclusion of Superman as an active character now on Supergirl.
Yes.
And I like the actor playing him. Two things. First thing, let's start with the unfortunate.
Fair enough. The bad news is...
The bad news is they forgot to have a 14-year-old read their ad copy before they released it.
Oh.
What it should have said is Superman appearing on Supergirl.
Oh.
Instead, it said...
No, not... Yeah.
It said something different.
And a 14-year-old boy...
A 14-year-old boy would have... The Snickers would have told them, this is a bad plan.
Yes.
This is what I always think you should do. You should have a younger than 15 but older than 12 teenager read all your ad copy, and if they start snorting, it's time to go, bad plan.
You don't even have to do that. You just have to have a web browser open to Urban Dictionary. I tell you, that's one of the jobs that I want in my spare time. I want to be the 14-year-old boy who goes, no, you don't get to say that anymore. No, you don't get to say it. No, dear heavens, no. Yeah.
So that's the bad news. The good news is, every indication is this is, in tone, Superman will be closer to the DC animated series Superman. Hopeful, sometimes a little funny, very much more. One thing they said is this is a Superman who's been active as Superman for over a decade. He's very relaxed in his role. He knows who he is. He knows what he's about. In other words, what they said is we're not getting the angsty Henry Cavill Superman. We are getting a much more enjoying himself, beacon of hope Superman.
Ixnay on the Imdark Grey?
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's... Because, again, I'm sitting here, and I'm sure at some point some Warner Brother exec's going to be, the TV Superman is making the movie Superman look bad. And my answer is, that should be a lesson.
Yes.
But you're probably going to take the wrong one.
Yes.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's it for TV. I want to talk about something we don't talk about very much on this show. Games.
Oh, okay.
So, I actually got No Man's Sky.
Yes.
Now, you're basically aware of No Man's Sky, right?
Basically. Yeah. I'm intrigued, let's put it that way.
Okay. So, the deal, of course, with No Man's Sky is it's a procedurally generated game, which means there's a vast universe, and because of the procedural creation, the game designers themselves don't know everything that's in the game.
Right.
Now, the accusation, a lot of people aren't happy, because a lot of what was promised didn't necessarily come through. There is talk of add-ons that might improve things later. But the description I've heard is it's a game as vast as the oceans.
Yes.
But only about an inch deep. Now, it's primarily, I look upon it as, it's a game that has survival aspects. Mm-hmm. If you're on a planet, you have to keep attention to where's my life support at? Do I have the right materials to power my life support? Am I getting the right materials to keep my ship running? And am I gaining enough credits to improve my equipment?
Right.
The whole time exploring new planets. For someone like me who lost hours to Minecraft, I'm a resource management aficionado. I love that kind of thing, and I love exploration in games. So in a lot of ways, I'm kind of the game's target audience.
Yeah.
On the flip side, I do admit that, you know, I am already getting to the point of, okay, I'm on this kind of planet, so it's going to be this kind of play. all right, now I'm going to this planet. Oh, this is a frozen planet. So I'm already beginning to figure, okay, there's for a game that's vast and procedurally generated, there is a certain amount of sameness that's coming in. So the question is, how much replay value? Versus Skyrim, which has a very set amount of stories, but some variation. And yet I, not that long ago, started my fourth playthrough doing a different type character again, because even with the settings, it's got enough variation that it's very interesting to play again.
Interesting. Well, it has been years since I've played any sort of game along those lines. At the same time, I have to say that the No Man's Sky does sound interesting to me. I've heard some of the critique of it and the criticism as far as it being just, too overwhelming. And frankly, you know what? Space.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying it right now.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes forward. I'm more intrigued by the concept and the potential of procedural generation. Because what I'm waiting for is something a little bit more robust. Something that has more interactive elements. You're enter a situation that's much more of a standard game scenario. So the one I envisioned is, I'm a superhero fan, obviously. And I was a big fan of the original City of Heroes game
right.
when it came out. And I played also played Champions Online and DC Online. So a lot of these games let you create your own superheroes. But then you're in the MMO setting, which is a little limited because in the end, things are kind of locked down. The world's persistent but unchanging. And what I want to see, what I'm hoping they'll figure out how to do is a game that's superhero-based that lets you, again, have the make-your-own-hero. But then when you're going to your encounters, have the encounters be procedurally generated. So there's not the walkthrough will tell you how to get through it. It's a situation that the game has procedurally generated and you've got to figure it out on the fly because there is no guideline of other than here's how you generally play the game. That's what I'm hoping that we'll see or something in the fantasy genre. You go out to explore a dungeon. Well, you don't know what the dungeon's going to look like because it's not generated until the moment you open the door.
You don't know what it's going to look like until you open the door. And frankly, the thing that would sell it for me and have a lot of gamers I know pulling their hair out is once you start in, you either die in there or you run out. There's none of this save halfway through or take two steps, save, take two steps, save sort of thing.
Yeah. So that's on the gaming front. Now, I haven't done a lot of further reading on my books, although I do now own The Martian.
Ah, yes.
And but the other thing, the problem is this. I like I've said, I want to read Sandman Slim. My temptation is going to be the latest Wild Card book came out.
Yes.
And I'm a huge Wild Cards fan, and I didn't realize it was coming out so soon. The problem is, the last Wild Cards book ended in a way that left me unsatisfied. Now, I understand that this is a direct continuation, and maybe it'll tie off the story, because it's the part three of a trilogy.
Wait a minute. Just to be certain, Wild Cards. George R.R. Martin, right?
George R.R. Martin, although he's not the primary writer.
Still.
He edits. Melinda Snodgrass is actually the primary writer on this one.
Okay.
One of the series' original creators. But yeah, George R.R. Martin's superhero universe. Interestingly, also getting a TV adaptation.
Yes. Well, all I have to say is, what's the nice way of putting this? He's an excellent beginner. He's an excellent expositor. If he has someone in there to wrap up a trilogy, God bless them. Yeah. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing that he needs.
Yeah. Which we might need for Game of Thrones. We don't know.
Exactly. On a related note, thinking of people who need editors, even though they're wonderful writers, if we're on to books, yes?
Yes.
So since last we have met, I'm 2.5 books down, which is saying something for as slow as I read.
Right.
First one, Seven Eves by Neil Stephenson. Wow. Great book.
Does it suffer from the Stephenson curse?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
But I have to... Okay. For those of you coming in late to the movie, my recurring critique of Neil Stephenson is that 2/3 of the way through every Neil Stephenson book, you have to just politely overlook the Deus Ex Machina that shows up and poof, and now we're doing something else. This time, he owns it, he recognizes it, and he rocks it. Show me another book out there that can have 2/3 of it be about the human race grinding to a halt. You start the final third, and the first sentence is 5,000 years later.
Fair enough. Well, his other curse is his endings peter out.
This one, the ending does not peter out. It's pretty good ending, solid ending. But I just love the whole, we're not even going to deal with all the minutiae of what happens for 5,000 years.
All right.
Let's do the math here. That would take us to 3000 BC.
Fair enough.
So there's that one. But at the same time, great book. The thing that makes me scratch my head is that there are obvious nods to pop culture people. Right now, there's a character in there who is very, very obviously Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Okay.
There's a character in there who is very, very obviously Malala Yousafzai.
Okay.
My question is if that makes the female president a nod towards Hillary Rodham Clinton. And we're not going to go any further than that because I know we have a strict Donnybrook on no politics on the show.
Yes.
So there's that. But Seven Eves, pretty damn good.
Okay.
The other book that I've read and finished was the first of the Expanse series, Leviathan Wakes by... The pen name is James S.A. Corey, I believe it is.
Okay.
But it's now the latest and greatest new show on Syfy.
Yeah.
Starring
Thomas Jane.
Starring Thomas Jane. Great show. Great book.
Neither of us watched the show.
Yeah. It's space opera. In the grand space opera tradition. The blurber on the book compared it to Peter Hamilton. I like this better than Peter Hamilton, but that's not saying much.
All right.
But then the third one, the one that I am like all of but 20 pages left in,
mm-hmm.
that I was really hoping to finish so I could say a complete thing about it,
mm-hmm.
but is called I Am Providence.
You told me about this one.
Which is, it is... a murder mystery set at a Lovecraft convention in Providence, Rhode Island. But I love it because it is this... I won't say it's an evisceration. I will say that it is a loving critique of the... that just needs a little extra correction sort of geek culture in general.
Right.
I really have been enjoying it, in part because there have been several times I've flinched and gone, oh, I've met that person at a con, or oh, I've been that person at a con.
Yeah.
So yeah, I am Providence by, I believe, Matamas is the last name.
Okay.
But yeah, well, enjoyable.
While we're on books,
yes.
Do you have anything you want to say about the Hugos?
Beyond that, no. The folks that won are were incredibly deserving. I give props to Andy Weir for sending an actual astronaut to accept his Hugo, because he wasn't able to be there. Beyond that,
it's kind of the death of the rabid puppies in a lot. Well, probably not death. They're not, Vox is not going to give up.
No,
but certainly a show that the community is just not going to put up with this kind of crap.
Yeah. I will say again what I've said before.
Mm-hmm.
Most geeks grew up being geeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that means to some extent we grew up being bullied.
Yeah.
I mean, I was horribly, horribly bullied all through elementary and middle school and most of the way through high school. The actions of the sad puppies and the rabid puppies is nothing more than bullying. And if there's one thing that we know, it's how to recognize a bully And now we know how to deal with a bully, which is telling them, no, you don't get to play that game. You don't get to put these things on us. You don't get to make us dance to your little tune.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really affirming to me to see the reaction in that way. So there's that.
All right. The only other thing I want to pour in it is I love that Jessica Jones won the Hugo for that. So, hey, you know, cool stuff. On podcasting front of other podcasts. So we're kind of in the between seasons of Wolf 359.
For better or for worse.
And they just finished up the mini-sodes, which was they did a like 10-minute long backstory episode of each major character from the last season of Wolf 359.
Yes.
And that's moving right into next week when season, I guess it's season three, or no, I think they're, because I think there was like season two was broken up into two halves.
Yeah.
Is how they counted it. But the new season of Wolf 359 premieres next week.
Excellent. They're not making us wait until January.
No, they the mini-sodes were just sort of covering while they were prepping the new season.
Excellent.
I'm kind of taking that as I'm playing with that for what we might do season gaps for Family Skeletons, which we are in the midst of recording. It's going slow because we're learning, but we are speeding up, and I hope we're going to have an October release, but if we don't, we don't. But things are moving forward. I'm really happy. As for other podcasts, the latest season of Black Tapes just wrapped up, and always keep an eye out for what else might be coming down the pike. There's a lot of talk right now because, you know, horror and science fiction seem to be the leading the pack of, you know, the audio drama resurgence.
Well, and it's not even, well, you're right. Speculative fiction in all its forms, specifically science, and also, but yeah, the horror aspect of it really, really have taken off because there's a hunger for it.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it. I mean, I'm sorry. I used to read Stephen King in the 80s. You know, and it's just, it's become so either drawn out or over bloody because, you know, I am the special little snowflake.
Yeah.
So to get these things in there that are creepy and edgy and not beat you over the head with it, it's really nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of where that is. With that, thank you once again for listening. I know. Thank you to the new listeners, including my coworker who discovered my podcast and has told me that she really enjoys it. Welcome aboard, Rosa.
Hi, Rosa.
And with that, if you want to drop us a line, we can be reached at fanboynewsnetwork.com. Just leave us a note in the comments section. And hopefully 2 weeks or so, we will be back again to regale you with what ended up falling out from Labor Day weekend.
Heaven help us all.
Take care, everyone.
Have a good one.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2016 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.